All right, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get the meeting started again. We have Tribal Fiscal with the financial update coming up. Again, please complete your surveys. You have a chance to win some nice prizes. Make sure you get your red ticket in. We'll do the drawing here in a few, but it's important that you guys give your input on that matter as well. We have our CFO here, Patricia Alvarado. She's going to kick off the second half of our meeting.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Patricia Alvarado, CFO for the Hoopa Valley Tribe. I've been serving in this role for the last several years. And so today we're going to give kind of an overview of 25, and we're going to talk about the IDC shortfall that we have seen in the past, his historical buildup of indirect. But before we get into that presentation, I first want to, some of you I think are new, or maybe you've joined other meetings in the past and you're familiar with the 2020 report that was done by an outside consultant, in which they used terms such as a sinking ship and negative net positions and different terms such as that. And so we really began assessing the financial strength of the tribe during that time in 2020. And creating a plan to move us in a positive direction. And we spent many years achieving that. And when I first started, I let the council and I let you know that it would take time. It would take time to get us to where we were in a positive standing as a tribe again. But we have reached that over the last several years as we presented to you in different financial reports in these meetings such as today. And with that being said, in 2023, when we were conducting our audit, we hired a firm formerly known as Moss Adams. They are now today Baker Tilly. And they were hired for a few reasons. One is when we started the whole analysis of government and bringing it into a positive standing, there was a lot of things on the books that were old and predated us that needed to be addressed. And so we started working on that fiscally upstairs. And we got to a halfway point, and with the magnitude of government, it's continuous. And so you have to keep up on the current, and we were revisiting a lot of things in the past, things that predated us. And so this firm was brought in to do that second half of the adjustment in 23 to get all those old balances taken care of. And so while they did that, and they showed that in their report that they gave to the council and the membership, that they made some adjustments. And oftentimes what was thought was, well, they're doing all the fiscal's work, or are they still doing their work today? And since that 2023 old balance cleanup, Baker Tilly hasn't made any financial adjustments to our books. What they do now is we keep them kind of retained on call for instances like this where we say, hey, they have their own login to our system. We say, hey, we're getting ready to do a general meeting. Can you come in as an outside perspective and give an overview of how that we did in the fiscal year? So we keep them on for transparency and to help present during these meetings. They were also retained for transparency reasons. There was comments from the community that they wanted more transparency, more data put out. So we kind of keep them in as a third-party look at our books. We also have the independent audit done. And so you'll hear from them here shortly. And today's presentation, we are going to focus again on the 2025 overview, and we're going to talk a little bit about the deficit shortfall that a lot of individuals have referenced over the years. I want you to know that the discussions that happened 5 years ago in the state of the tribe are no longer applicable today, because we've changed that trajectory. We've fixed a lot of the things that were causing that negative shortfalls within the budgets over the last several years, to bring ourselves into a more positive standing governmentally. Now, enterprise is a whole beast in of itself, and that requires a lot of attention and a lot of work there. As Joe mentioned, there's an RFP put out to help them and their services on the enterprise side of the tribe, which still has to be addressed. But governmentally speaking, when we moved into those positive positions, there were still two things left on our books that we have to address today. That is the past, and that needs to be dealt with. And that is the indirect cost shortfall and the related party receivables. For today, we're going to focus on the indirect shortfall cost, because when we've had previous meetings, working meetings with council and membership, some of the questions that came from them, from membership, is, well, did we spend outside the budget? And also, what funding was used to pay for this? Was this money from the membership pocket that was used to cover indirect shortfall? So our hope is today we can kind of unravel some of that. And the professional opinion that came from the firm was to write off that shortfall that happened over many years. And so we're talking years 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, years where there was a shortfall in collections. And now we're at the point where we have to make that decision. And even though today when we run our financials for you guys, those balances are still in there as a shortfall, but collectively the tribe is still in a positive standing. And so today we'll go through an indirect kind of shortfall scenario and look at one particular year, and then take any questions. The goal is to have a decision made on that indirect shortfall and whether or not we're going to write it off, and what the process is to move forward, and having collaborative discussion with the membership and making sure that we're all on the same page, understanding how it was derived, how it was paid for, and so on. So if I believe Shanna is online, and if we can have the her screen share, and she'll do the presentation.
Shanna Daniels of Baker Tilly.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being able to join your meeting today. I do have this short presentation, so I'm going to start with the agenda here, just kind of giving an overview of what we're going to be discussing in this presentation today. So the first couple of slides, we're going to review your summarized financial statements with updated 2025 balances. And we're going to dive in a little bit deeper and look at Minimart in regards to the 2025 general welfare distribution. And just let you see kind of how Minimart is performing even with that distribution considered. Next, we are going to continue the discussion on IDC. As Patricia mentioned, we broke out a specific year, 2019, to kind of give you a closer look at just one particular year, maybe help understand kind of what's happened over the course of the years as to how this IDC shortfall has come about. So here in this first slide, this is your tribal government funds. We have the 2023 balances, which have been audited. We have the 2024 and the 2025 balances. The 2024's audit is near completion, but the audit has not been issued yet, so that's why we have it noted as unadjusted. And of course, the 2025 audit has not started yet. So again, they're noted as unadjusted, but that just means they're not fully audited yet. So on the left, you'll see the summarized statement of net position, also known as a balance sheet. And we break out to show you the cash balances of the tribal government funds and just a consolidated other assets account. You can see from 23 to 24, there was quite a large increase in other assets, and that came mostly from a large land purchase in fiscal year 2024. And of course, that also increased your overall fund balance from $29 million to $46 million. And you can see in 2025 that your balances stay pretty close to the same as far as assets, liabilities, and fund balances are from 24 to 25. On the right side of the screen, you'll see the statement of activities, also known to some as maybe like a profit and loss statement. You can see in 24 that your revenues increased about $600,000. And in 25, your revenues increased about $1 million. Expenditures from 23 to 24 are about the same overall. And they did increase in 25. But you can see in the bold line at the bottom, the change in net position, that in 2024, there was a significant increase. But in 25, you come back down to about a normal operating change in that position of $1.1 and $1.5 million. This next slide is your grants fund. So it's collectively all of your state or federal funding related to grants. And you can see that in 23, again, these are set up the same way. 2023 has been audited, 2024 and 2025, but it's not been audited yet. You can see that your fund balance is running right about $10 million. It goes up a little bit at the end of 2025. But overall, your assets seem to be increasing, which just signifies that your grant funding is being used to invest into assets. Over on the right side, you can see the revenues and expenditures. In 2023, there was a very significant change in that position. That mostly came from the adjustments that we assisted the fiscal department in making during the 2023 audit year. But then in 24, they come back down to a significantly reasonable change in that position. You don't really want to see a lot of change in that position in your grants. But you can see that your revenues are far exceeding your expenditures in each year. On this next slide is a summary of your enterprise funds. This is kind of everything that doesn't fall under the government. It includes your various enterprises that are handled by your government fiscal department, which include like the mini mart, mini storage, the grocery store, I think, and things like that, that don't have their own standalone accounting department. On the right side, on the left side, you can see that your equity balance is, which is also known as a fund balance, is at $7.3 million at the end of 2025. And that is just showing that overall, over the life of these enterprises, that you are continuing to make money. That's kind of your profit as of 9/30/2025, that ending equity balance. On the right side, you can see your revenues and expenditures, and again, indicating that your enterprises are operating very well, just if you look at the revenues minus expenditures. In the net transfers line, you can see the $3.6 million, which was the general welfare distributions from Minimart in fiscal year 2025, and we'll dive into that just a little deeper, but you can see that because of those net transfers, it resulted in a negative change in equity for the year. So in this slide, we went back to 2020. The first two columns are simply your revenues and expenditures. The next column, the net income for transfers and distributions, this would be your operating income, just how did the enterprise Minimart, this is only looking at Minimart, how did Minimart perform prior to any distributions that were done? And then the next column is your total distributions or transfers for the year. And again, on the bottom, on the 2025 line, you'll see the $3.6 million for the membership distribution. And then you see the change in equity column, which is your operating income less your net transfers or distributions. So you can see for Minimart alone that your operating revenue was $1.9, almost $2 million in 2025, and then you had a $3.6 million distribution, which resulted in a net loss after transfers of $1.6 million. That second to last column there, the ending equity balance, you can see that at the end of 2025, your equity balance was $3.1 million, which is just saying that since Minimart began operations, it has built a profit of $3.1 million, and at 2025, even after the $3.6 million distribution, you guys are still sitting at $5.7 million, which is very indicative of a successful enterprise here. Okay, so now we'll jump into the IDC discussion. We shortened up this table a little bit from prior presentations, and we show you the revenues and expenditures, which the revenues would be what is collected from the programs in IDC revenue, and the expenses are the expenses of the IDC fund, and then the change in balance, and the ending fund balance, which is as of the end of 2025, is a negative fund balance of $9.9 million. And you can see that that has increased. I might be saying that in a confusing way. It has become more positive in 2025 than where you were at the end of 2019. So 2019, you were at negative $10.1 million. And you have brought it down to a negative $9.9 million as of 2025. In the change in fund balance column there, you'll see that in 2024, there was technically a profit, so to speak. It's not really a profit because it's just this change in fund balance that is making it less negative. But it's indicative that you collected more IDC revenue from the programs than what were spent. So we decided to dive in a little deeper on 2019 since there was a large negative change in fund balance of $2.3 million in that year. So a lot of discussion has been brought up about the budgets and how they relate to the IDC performance or IDC fund performance. So we broke this down just to let you see what was the approved budgets for revenues in 2019 for the IDC fund. You can see that it was budgeted for $5.6 million, but what was actually collected was only $2.8 million. So that's just saying that the tribe did not collect the anticipated IDC amount for that year. This is likely due to the grant's IDC expense being less than budgeted. So in the budget season, they would have considered, well, we expect the grants to spend this much money, which means they'll have to pay this much IDC. So that's how we're going to collect. This is how much we're going to collect in the IDC fund. And you can see that in the second section there in the middle of the page under expenses, that they had budgeted the same amount for expenses as they did for revenues. And that the tribe actually came in under budget for revenue or for expenses that year. So overall there at the bottom, you can see that we budgeted just a zero profit or loss in the fund. And then while we did come in under budget on expenses, it wasn't enough to cover the under collection of the IDC in that year, which resulted in a net loss of the $2.3 million. So to go a little further, we decided to incorporate the general fund and show you how the general fund performed in 2019. So you'll see that the general fund collected $4.9 million in total revenues. Total expenses were right at $4.8 million. And so there was a change in fund balance of $107,000 for the year. At the end of that fiscal year, your ending fund balance was a positive $2.1 million. And just to kind of show you how, I know in previous conversations we've mentioned that the general fund kind of temporarily covered these IDC, well, I shouldn't say temporarily, has accumulated this coverage of the IDC shortfalls year after year after year. And so for this year specifically, we broke it down to let you see, you know, the change in fund balance in the general fund was $107,000. And I believe that it's been mentioned before that the reason that the general fund was able to cover this IDC shortfall was because the general fund was holding payments to the group health and workers' comp fund. And so you can see that there were AP checks issued at the end of fiscal year 2019. They were issued, but they were held, meaning they weren't sent to the group health and workers' comp funds of a total of almost $1.9 million. And then additionally, there were AP bills entered. Checks had not been cut yet on these, but there were AP bills due to group health and workers' comp funds at 9/30/19 of $800,000. And so essentially at the end of 2019, the general fund had an excess of $2.8 million available to assist the general or the IDC fund with this $2.3 million loss in that year. So that just kind of explains in this one fiscal year how this worked. In talking with your fiscal department, the AP checks are no longer being held. That practice has stopped. And so the AP checks are being sent regularly to group health and workers' comp as they're coming due. And that's being, you can see back in the 2024 and 2025 IDC table that because IDC was not operating at a shortfall, it didn't need this kind of support from the general fund. That's the end of my presentation. Are there any questions?
We have a comment.
Oh,
okay.
It's working? Okay. Danny Jordan. First of all, Patricia, if the budget is balanced at this point, and we're not losing money, thank you for that. Because the bleeding is stopping, right? And maybe has stopped. That's great for the tribe's future. We still have this problem of this backlog, right? Now, the deficit, as we define it, and as described by Moss Adams, is really two parts. One is a $10 million contract support. The other is the, we don't know the number, but let's just say it's $8 million from the entities and all them. HFI, $2.6 million is part of that deficit. I don't believe that's an HFI deficit. I believe it's a forestry HFI deficit because HFI can't put timber sales out. If HFI doesn't have timber sales, it can't produce the money. But it has to pay for the cost of being ready to log. We need to bring those things together. So when we look at the deficit, we really need to look at two parts. The way that the entities, the $300,000+ is owed by the casino. That's that non-contract support deficit. Go get the money. Just make the casino pay. And make them incorporate that into their ongoing management exactly the same way that any profit-making business does. HFI, again, we went through 2 years in my last term on the council developing the scope. There's just not money. But it's actually performance associated with generating those debts. Those are things that can be cleaned up. Now, so I'm very interested in seeing where we're going with those, that if it is $8 million, I don't know what it is, with those entity debts or those non-tribal debts. Roads carries a good portion of that. But with respect to the contract support debt of $10 million, you can't write it off. That is, if you write it off, you're writing off membership money. It's not fake money. People got paid that money, right? So the money was, because their checks were made, it was money that came under the authority of Article 9, Section 1C of the Constitution, right? That's just the people's money. That being said, I don't believe it's a $10 million debt. because one example, or two examples that I use, I always use, is Head Start. By law, they only pay 6%, right? So the tribe pays 94%. The TCCC was 5%. So the tribe pays 95% of that. Why? Because those programs were great opportunities and benefits to tribal members, right? That part of that $10 million should be adjusted to reflect that. But we've also done some work, on, you have a hearing coming up on February 26th on the balanced equity ordinance. The tribe has paid lots of money, millions of dollars out, to run HOOPA, rights of way, water, PUD, all the things that we pay, ambulance, another one, is exclusively paid for by HOOPA money, and it benefits everyone that they don't pay for. It's only HOOPA people paying for that. That's part of that balance as well. In the end, I do believe, the other part of that, what is the purpose of tribal government, right? It's to provide services, according to the Constitution, is to promote the general welfare. Part of the contract support deficit is paid to programs to enforce some things like Indian preference, buy local, those things of reinvesting the money back into HOOPA, but those same managers were paid from contract support, and yet $30 million went out to outside companies without Indian preference being enforced. So my point is, I can find ways to really significantly reduce the $10 million, but it cannot happen as long as tribal managers prioritize sending the money to the outside. If we did do that, promote the general welfare standard that's in the Constitution, we would be finding ways to put that money internally. And it becomes very similar to Head Start and TANF. I'm not TANF, but TCCC, where if those investments go back into HOOPA, and the HOOPA membership, HOOPA businesses are actually included in the benefit plans for the tribe, you can begin to say, these are benefits paying to ourselves, right? But it's hard to say that when the money goes to all these outside contractors. So I can find ways to really bring all these pieces together that really do reduce significantly the $10 million debt because it goes to HOOPA, right? In the end, it's self-investment. That makes sense, but it doesn't make sense as long as those managers that we're paying from contract support are sending all the money out to the outside companies. Let's fix that. Let's develop a strategy. At the last general meeting, there was a promise made that we would put these things in a working meeting and come to the table and really look at how they come together. Meeting has yet to happen. I think that we can write a lot of this debt off legitimately, but it cannot come with managers saying we're going to continue to not support local economy. We're not going to support investing in ourselves, because the end result of that is, Joe, you mentioned it, we can't continue this poverty agenda. If we can design a plan of self-investment, we can put a lot of these pieces in their proper perspective that they were probably used to support HOOPA economy building or tribal government. I'll give you one more example, PUD, right? PUD, and I have data information on this, but that I'll present at that February 26th meeting. PUD only charges for water, the annual monthly payment, right? PUD is a lot bigger than that. When they have a backhoe that goes out, HOOPA membership pays for that, right? Those are examples that how we can factor in the legitimate things that went to HOOPA. But I don't want to cross too many lines here, but the irrigation system, that is completely paid for by PUD and Hoopa people, right? How many non-members are getting benefits from the irrigation system? We hear about it all the time, right? Those are things that can be factored in. At the end of it, you can really walk through a very logical process of saying what really is the part of the $10 million that is outstanding, which is not. I think it's a lot less than what we think. And if we, even at that, as we put into our 26-point proposal, if we had a 3-year plan to deal with that, we could wipe out probably the entire debt because it's us, right? It's our future. We have got to figure this stuff out.
Thanks, Danny. I know you had asked for that town hall meeting we scheduled on March 18th for small businesses. That might be a good place to start to figure out how do we get our businesses available to get some of these big contracts. You know, it goes all the way back to the grocery store in 2017. You know, the bids went out and we only got one bid, and that was Danco. And then the same with some of these others. Is it the bonding? You know, maybe somehow these 3 to 5 tribal member contractors can come together and figure out the bonding so they can be awarded to the local contractors. Because lately, just, you know, those big projects, whether that be the Elder Housing Village, the Education Center, Kamau's Housing Project, I mean, I just don't know that we're getting the bids from our local contractors, but we got to figure that out. Why is that? How do we the tribe help back them so they can get those contracts? Okay. Okay, Mary?
I have a lot of questions, I think. So the first one is about the gas station. The $3.6 million that was paid out in this financial statement is, I believe, general welfare distribution to the membership. Is that consistent with the per capita ordinance? Is that what that was? And if so, is there more that's owed to the membership then? I haven't seen anything that shows a statement that's consistent with the per capita ordinance, or is that a separate payment and there's still money owed to the membership?
I believe that the figure that was paid out, it was like 456 a tribal member, 465, something like that. I thought that was calculated from the 80-20. Was that correct?
So the issue that we have when calculating the 80-20 is you have to put in the roads department. You have to put in a couple different entities, and their books are not accurate to date. And so it's hard to get to the 80-20. So we used the individuals who had the standing books at the time to calculate an 80-20 at the time. But Minimar held the most cash in order to support the distribution in 2025.
Mary Benedict.
So I'm just going to mention audits are due 9 months after the end of the fiscal year. So I heard that the 24 audit was not complete for the tribe, I thought I heard. So if that's the case, this audit is late. And I saw in the report for Kamau that's the case also. And I don't understand why it would be late. But the per capita ordinance bases the number off of audited financial statements, which is 2 years later. So there's no reason why that calculation can't be done because it's a two years later. So there's no reason why that statement should get mailed out to membership. We should know what's owed to us. Even if you don't pay it to us, we should know what the tribe owes us. So I just want to make that statement about that. Secondly, I have a question because it sounds like you're looking for an answer from membership today about writing off an old balance on the indirect. And I don't know the answer to this, so maybe the consultant can answer it. I'm curious what the tribe's indirect is. Is it like a fixed carry forward rate? And how is that affected if the tribe does write that off? If the tribe says, yeah, go ahead and write it off, like how does that affect the rate on a fixed carry forward? I just don't know the answer to that. And then secondly, if the tribe owes from the general fund the group health insurance and the workers' comp, which the tribe is self-insured, like, what does that mean? Like, are you allowed to just owe our own insurance and not pay it? Like, is that allowed? Like, we're just going to, like, is the council going to just keep taking from our businesses to fix the government's problems? Like, when does that stop? That's my question.
For our audits are broken out into, I think with the help of Baker Tilly, we decided, because there was enterprises that were behind in their books that didn't allow us to move forward. So collectively, the tribe was built in with PUD as in our audit. So was Roads Department, Credit EDA. It was all compacted. And so Credit EDA lost members, Roads Department lost accountants. We couldn't get their information in order to complete the whole audit. And so so we had to move forward, though. We have an obligation to submit our single audit every year. So we moved forward with the grants and government audit of the tribe for 2024. The grants audit is completed. We did do the grants audit. We already started the 25 as we're subject to get it in by June 30th, our 25 audits. For the grants audits up there in the slide that she presented, she has it listed and audited. It needed to be corrected because we do have the report for that. It has been audited. For enterprise, we had to move forward still. So Roads Department and Credit EDA are on their own independent audit now because we had to move forward in getting the tribe caught up on the enterprise side. We can't sit around and wait for them. But also government is so it's complex, and so we can't get over there and do all the reconciliations, the bank recs, the AR, to bring it into audit status. And so with this RFP that's going out, we're hoping that the firm that gets it is able to bring them current in order to complete those audits and have that information that we are needing and lacking right now. For indirect costs, we submit an indirect cost proposal each year. What is unique about this year is IBC changed the submission process and created a whole new template. And so when we submitted our rate for 2026, we were able to submit it in a way that showed whether or not, because right now we're wage-based, and you can do an all-lines, I call it all-line aggregate. You can collection on all multiple lines, not just wages. And so it allowed us to put it into a worksheet and actually see what our rate would be if we stayed with the wages or if we went to an all-line submission. And we actually showed that we got a better rate and we will collect more at our current wage rate that we do. So we're staying with that one. And we could share that with the council. It could be available next meeting if you guys would like. So that's my status on that. As far as are we going to let this stuff still continue? We're not seeing shortfalls in the budgetary side of things. We're not seeing shortfalls in indirect like we used to see before that prohibited us from making timely group health workers' comp payments to our own selves. I have heard in the past that we are self-insured and that say your premiums are set at a rate to you collect beyond what you're paying out. I've been told that, you know, the council can then determine if there's an excess amount of funds in that group health workers' comp, pull it out and budget it and however they deem necessary to support government. But there is no, like, strategic policy on that side of it.
Sally Slater.
What's the consequences for that, council? And, I'm loud, so you should be able to hear me. Has it been corrected in the fiscal? And also, the chairman did mention earlier about the accounting department has not been working all together. We're not, you know, why everything's not online with the entities such as, you know, the gas station. I think that was the main concern, and getting their dailies in on time and getting things done, produced and finished at fiscal. So I'm a little concerned about, has that been corrected over the years?
So on the managerial side of things, that would be a question for the council in terms of when they hire a manager in the position of an entity or an enterprise, that they, that manager assumes the role to make sure that they have the, because they operate their own accounting departments. They have their own bank accounts. They have their own people who are running their payroll over there. So they need to make sure that they, the managers, make sure that they're hiring individuals who are skilled enough to do those tasks. Because within government, we're running a multi-million dollar organization here, so we're not going to go over and sit there for the day and be able to do that while trying to fix government over the last several years to bring it into a positive standing, to get us out of this negative budget situation that we've seen, because that's been the focus. Government has been a big focus for me. And so the enterprise side of it still needs work, and it still needs those areas addressed, and I think the council is doing that by this RFP that went out and having an a firm help those enterprises and entities get caught up and have the directors get the training they need to be successful. Because accounting is a complex field. There's a lot of different areas you got to reconcile daily and address, and there's just not a whole lot of skill bank out there. I mean, we have a couple budget analyst positions within our organization, and we haven't really gotten any applicants for that either. It requires an individual with the necessary skills to do grant management and get into the GL and really dig into it. And fortunately, with our remote location, those positions are hard to fill, even on the entity side. On Credit EDA, Cassie's back, and so they're going to be getting their stuff in order. She was working for us. I'm a little sad that we lost her, but I know she'll do good things over there and get that place back in order. And so there is changes happening.
Because I'm just concerned that I thought that was cleared up. And when I served on the grocery store board, that was a few years ago, that was disorganized, and hopefully it got organized now. But we're talking about, you know, millions and millions into the billions of dollars of our money, the people's money. And when you live poor and you see all this is going on and we don't have managers doing their job, and they should already, just like Lois mentioned, the council should know your job, just like managers in your fiscal departments. You have to be accountable to us, the people. So when I hear that we're not in order, that's where the council should, you know, have people in positions that can do that. I don't want to hear this every time I come to a meeting that we're not organized as a tribe when it comes to fiscal.
Hey,
that's
Sally,
our money.
This RFP that keeps getting mentioned, that's a request for proposal.
Yeah,
so what the council did was, in this last budget cycle, we set aside, I believe it was about $450,000 in carryover money that was still available from previous years that wasn't spent, to hire a qualified firm, kind of like they did with the whole Moss Adams, that can come in, and I mentioned in my opening report, is to streamline all of our accounting. So each of these, so these divisions all have kind of a similar accounting system that can be aligned with what we have upstairs. And then having people there to kind of help train our accountants and our departments, our managers and our leadership. Changes have been made. I mean, we are looking for a new roads director right now. The interviews will be probably within the next 2 weeks, I believe. We're hiring a new casino manager. We've gone through turnover in the past with HFI. So it's not that it's just being ignored and allowed to continue to happen. These are all part of the changes that we're trying to make to improve it, you know, is to go out and get new managers, get new accounting software, train accountants, and get those things squared away. Like I said, we've already seen progress at Rhodes. DeNoto's been down there cleaning up their books, and now we have, between January and February, they've made a profit of over $100,000, and so that was a net profit. So that's a positive sign. It allows you to identify deficiencies, because one of the things we saw with Rhodes before was they were crushing rock based on the orders. And instead of having the rock crushed and stockpiled ahead of time so that when the orders come in, they're ready to go, So we've been trying to do that. However, the equipment down there, they can't crush when it's raining. But so they're trying their best. We had to spend $40,000 this month to put work into the crusher. So there are changes that are being made. And, you know, I think getting that expertise here, our workforce development is a big issue. I mean, like she mentioned, it's hard to find accountants. It's really hard. A couple of years ago when the casino, their accountant passed away, and I sat down with the manager at that time, and we called, I think it was like 24 different CPA firms, and only one of them was willing to work with us. They all said they were overburdened. They had too much work to do. So, I mean, if we have people that, you know, can do that work, that are interested in that training, we need to start developing our own accountants, because that's an issue. We have that shortage. As Patricia mentioned, she has positions that still need to be filled that have gone vacant for a long time, and that's just that's what we deal with here. But, you know, this, it's not that nothing's being done about it, because the ones that haven't paid their fair share of the health costs, you know, are, some of them are no longer with the tribe.
Yeah, well, the Noto board, it's been almost 2 years since they started, and I haven't received a
The CEO has been coming once a month and reporting at the regular council meetings. They have a annual meeting for the membership coming up in April. But I had communicated that to them just this last week that, hey, council members in particular aren't happy because the information isn't getting out to the membership. And I had asked them to even put articles into the local newspaper, which I'm hoping they'll do.
Hold on to these.
I agree with you. The information hasn't been what we would like for the membership. So hopefully that annual meeting that they're holding in April will help. And then we can get even more than that. But I see that it has been beneficial, particularly the things that have been happening down at Rhodes have been, you know, making progress in the accounting. They've helped Rhodes clean up from the fire. There was, you know, a lot of junk just left around there. It was cleaning that up, identifying those things, identifying the need to stockpile the rock. I mean, it's been helpful. Keep in mind, yeah, they did get a $500,000 grant. But the board, 4/5 of them are tribal members that work for free. They don't get paid at all, the board does. The CEO does. Darren Mastin's the chairman. And then you have Lauren Norton's a board member. Amanda Colgrove, she's an accountant. Let's see, you have Michelle McCovey-Good. She's an architect engineer, has her own firm in San Luis Obispo. And then Steve Caligaris is a former tribal attorney. He's the only non-tribal member on the board. And there will be future, they're just like any other board, so they have to be reelected by the council every 2 years or 3 years, whatever it is. I can't remember now, but so... You know, we're not stuck with this same board forever. If you feel there needs to be changes, I happen to like the board that we have. Like I said, they put in a lot of work for free. They're not being paid nothing, but we do need more information, that's for sure. Steve?
Steve Baldy.
Yeah, I just have a couple of comments. One of the things that I think happens in these meetings is that we start confusing terms. You know, we start using accounting terms, which everybody is not totally comfortable with, only accountants usually, and sometimes they aren't. But when we're talking about, we used the term deficit in the past, and people started correcting us and saying, no, When you look at the overall tribe, there is no deficit. So when you look at a statement that's in here, you see something that's got revenues, cash, assets, liabilities, expenses, and fund balance. And you look at the fund balance or the balance, and you see a positive. The problem with that is that that doesn't tell the full story. What we should have been talking about in the past and today is the over expenditures that's within what I just said, those formulas. The over expenditures of indirect costs. The over expenditures of our enterprises that we've been covering. This report talks about $11 million, more or less, in indirect that's been going down. But we haven't discussed and pointed out where that money came from in order for the tribe to
Is there another mic we can get for Steve? Yeah, just a second, Steve. There's another mic coming here. Couldn't handle the energy. That one out, too. Come up here. You can stand at the podium here if you'd like. Try it again. Try it now. Nope.
Hello?
Okay. There it goes.
Trick is talk to the... Goes out, too. So anyway, the question is, where did the money come from? In order to pay for the over expenditure and indirect. It can only come from a couple of sources, and it's called general fund money. And what is in the general fund money? In that general fund category is money that is also due to the membership at some point in time. So what we have...
over a number of years from 2019 forward is spend money that is rightfully due to private membership. That's what we've done. Now, I've gone to meetings, and most recently, now we're talking about, instead of arguing about what the actual figure was, because everybody said, no, it's not that high. Well, then you finally paid for an audit, and they came up with a figure, said, yeah, it's that high. Then we start talking about, oh, okay, let's just write it off. Now, if that's a consideration, I think that the council, especially of those of you that are running for re-election now, should make that clear to the membership that what you are recommending is that you write off that amount, that those funds that are due to the membership.
The purpose of breaking down indirect just in this meeting today with the presentation that you have, and we will talk about related party receivables, meaning the entity side of it, HFI, the casino, roads department, in our next quarter meeting, because that should have a discussion in and of itself. For indirect cost right now, what we wanted to present to the membership was how that $11 million was derived. $11 million wasn't derived in 1 year to pay for it. This is a span of years. So we just looked at 19 as an overview just to show you the breakdown. The breakdown shows that group health and workers' comp was not paid, and the cash was held in the general fund to support that IDC loss, not the membership dollar. And those balances, that outstanding, now we still make our monthly payment to our group health and workers' comp account because we have to make those claims. And our claims are quite high right now, quite frankly. And it costs us money to make those claim payments, but we're doing it, and we're making sure we're cashing that check. But that historical number there from 2019, there's still a payable due to the group health workers' comp from that time frame. And that's that $2-something million, and that's the $2-something million shortfall you had in IDC that year. And that's why we wanted to show you that it is not out of the tribe. You keep saying it's out of the tribal membership pocket, but that is the fact in front of you right there that shows that it is not. And so the council can write that off because we're writing it off to our own self, our own group, our home workers' comp. And we had an actuary study done, and that actuary study said you only need to keep a reserve of $1 million. So if we look at what's outstanding to group health workers comp, maybe it's $6 million. I don't have the number in total, but we can actually only have $1 million. And
your response, you're saying that the group health balances were used to pay the over retention of the paid rate. Is that what you just said?
Yes, and that's what that shows.
At that time, the group health, I say it's 2.8. Is that correct?
At that point in 2019. We're only looking at 2019.
Mm-hmm. So you had a 2.8 balance, but you had at 2018, a certain interest
right.
above that.
No, it wasn't. It was right. It was actually below it, right below it. And that's what that shows. And then you look at, if you look at every year prior, if, look at how much wasn't cash in group health workers come.
Indirect cost over expenditure is $10 million.
Collectively. So break it down per year. We only broke it down.
You have
to break it down by year, Steve, or you're not going to get an accurate number. So let's look back to 2013.
Somebody had to pay for that to get that high.
Exactly. Workers comp and group health. But now look back to 13. We'll see the same thing. We'll see that group health and workers comp had a payable due at that same time for the amount that group health or that IDC was a shortfall. You'll see the same thing. We looked at it per year, but we just wanted to present you in 19, so we're not convoluting with tons of numbers. But those are facts, and those are facts that you're seeing from a CPA, one of the second largest CPA firms in the world, and you're going to argue and say it's out of membership dollar, and it's not.
All you're saying now, you're saying that the group health payments for those 5 years, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, the group health paid for the over expenditure of those indirect costs.
That's exactly what the numbers say.
I mean, that's what you're saying.
Yes, and I conclude with them. That's what they found in going through the books. And that is what I see as well in my own independent review.
So, there were no general funds used, no membership funds used.
No, it was all group health and workers' comp. That is where it comes from. And that's why we feel confident enough to say, write it off.
Now, does that money belong back to the self-insurance program?
From my understanding, according to Liz, and I wish she was here, is that the group health and workers' comp is our own fund, right? We're self-insured. And that's when you're an insurance company.
Hey, can you take this mic? And then, Steve, you should be able to use that one over there.
When you're an insurance company, you're for profit. You're trying to make a dollar. For us, in our own insurance organization, we do see, based on historical review, we're actually collecting a little more than our premiums. Of course, we'd have a positive cash reserve in there. And I'm told that you can then take that funding. Say if there's $10 million in our group health workers comp. We can take that as a tribe. The council can take that as a tribal government and put it into the budget to spend it in a different area. There's nothing that prohibits them from doing that. So even if there was a shortfall in those years and we cashed all those checks, whoever was managing the budget at that time could have went to the tribal council and said, hey, we didn't get to collect as much IDC as we thought we would. We're $2.3 million short. We need to, you know, transfer it over. Our group health sitting at $10 million. Let's pull it over to the general fund so we can cover it. That's just another way of doing a budget.
So that employees, this is the group health insurance, is only paid for by the tribal government, right? There's just no deductions or anything from the employee.
Yeah.
For that insurance.
Yeah, so just last week I asked Faylene for some data on our enrollment status. I think on government side we have 174 employees that are enrolled in our health plan. 97 of those are individuals who are under the single category, which means that government is picking up the full, or the employer is picking up the full premium cost of that employee, not the employee themselves. Now, if an employee chooses to get a coverage for their family or their children, then they're paying a premium, and that's for the costs associated with claims for their kids and so on and so forth.
So then some of it would by that statement, would belong to the employee.
I mean, I pay $90 a month for my kids. They go to the dentist. Are you saying that because they didn't cash a check, but I took my kid to the dentist and they had work done, and the tribe paid that cover cost, but I pay my premium, that somehow the tribe owes me money back? I think not.